Hello, and welcome to Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. This is Adrian Tuddenham, and I'm going to be your guide for the next few weeks as we ramble through a miscellany of sounds from the forgotten past. Not just classical, not just musical, not even jazz, but types of music and performance which were as familiar in their day as the Beatles were in the 1960s. But now they are so completely forgotten that they don't even have a name. When vinyl records started to appear on the market in the early 1950s, it marked the end of an era. The old, brittle, scratchy 78s were rapidly packed off to the local junk shop, and with them went three whole generations of music. A few particularly worthy pieces were reissued on the new LPs, but by and large no one was interested in that old junk anymore. Two generations further on, and we are only just beginning to realise that we have lost something. But what we have lost is difficult to appreciate now that the means of playing old records has also been consigned to the dustbin. With specialised playback equipment and a better understanding of the secret techniques used by an elite band of recording experts, as the engineers were called in those days, I'm going to trawl through the contents of a well-stocked junk shop of the 1950s and unearth a few of the surprises lurking in those dusty piles of discs, cylinders and mysterious perforated paper rolls. Let's begin our voyage of discovery with A Local Train Journey, composed by Otto Rathke and played by Ricardo and his orchestra in 1931. It was published on the Decca label and appears at first sight to be an English record, but Decca had a tie-up in the 1930s with the German Polydor company. If our junk shop isn't too dimly lit, and we can get the light just right, it should be possible to read the words Mechanisches Copyright 1931 on the blank playing surface around the label. Now, let's put the disc on the turntable and play it, and listen for the clues that this isn't an English local train journey at all.
Thank you.
A Local Train Journey by Otto Rathke, played by Ricardo and his orchestra. Did you spot the clues that this was a German train? The clanging level crossing gongs and, right at the end, the bursts of steam escaping from the Westinghouse pump as it pressurised the air brakes. Sounds we wouldn't have heard on English railways. Our next record is English. Very English indeed, as you will hear from the accents. In 1926, listening to the wireless was becoming all the rage, and the BBC's broadcasting station, 2LO, in Savoy Hill, was producing the first generation of radio stars. Among the performers in those early days were a pianist named B.C. Hilliam, who also sang with a very light voice, and Malcolm McKechan, actually born in Australia, who possessed one of the deepest bass voices of all time. Their double act as Flotsam and Jetsam was broadcast regularly. They made many theatrical appearances and left us a legacy of some excellent gramophone recordings. Now, if you think that jogging around the park to keep fit is a modern fad, you would be quite wrong. Here's Flotsam and Jetsam's take on it, recorded in February 1931. The title is Mrs. Peer Gynt.
Mrs. Peer Gynt, you know Gynt's second wife, realized she was getting uncommonly stout. The first Mrs. Gynt had been supple and slim, so there really was something to worry about.
Old Mr. Gynt threw out many a hint that she ought to take long morning runs in the park. So to the sweet morning music of Grieg, Mrs. Peer Gynt the second got up with the lark.
Wide awake at daybreak, a pink plump lake Mrs. Gynt would shake. Out she'd creep, half asleep, at 6 o'clock in the
In her sweater and her running shorts, she'd do her daily sprint. People watched her trot along, waging war on Om Bong Pong, trying to be thinner, hooping into pinner when she wasn't scooting out to upper tooting. Apoplectic, energetic, puffing, panting for old Mrs. Peer Gynt.
Glad to say that the day when she'd weigh 15 stone, hippipporay, is gone forevermore. All the neighbors realize she was wise to exercise. Madam's only half the size that madam was before.
How it has improved her life, Mr. Gynt with a knife has cut out mentioning first wife. The subject is taboo. Now he's very satisfied, looks with pride at second bride, now that she can get inside the baby Austin too.
Moral, why be double chinned? Take a hint from Mrs. Gynt. Do your early morning sprint if you would be petite.
Now our story is complete. The elite on the street. All remarkable isn't Mrs. Peer Gynt sweet?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All remarkable isn't Mrs. Peer Gynt sweet?
Flotsam and Jetsam there with Mrs. Peer Gynt. Lyrics by Flotsam and, of course, music by Grieg. You're listening to Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. The records you've been hearing up to now were all recorded electrically, with a microphone, amplifier and magnetic cutter head to get the sounds into the grooves. That system first came into serious commercial use in 1926, so recordings before that date were all done by the acoustic process. To put it simply, the performer bellowed down a horn, which concentrated the sound onto a thin diaphragm. Under this onslaught, the diaphragm trembled, and its movement was connected by a lever to a sharp tip, which cut a wiggly groove into a fragile revolving wax disc. By electroplating, the image of the fragile wax master disc was transferred to metal stampers, which were pressed into a lump of hot plastic with a force of many tons to make the final product. A brittle, hard, black disc which could withstand the pounding of a heavy acoustic pickup. It may seem like a very crude system, But with skill and ingenuity, some marvellous recordings were made by this method during the first 30 years of gramophone recording history. Of course, not all the recordings were treasured mementos of top-class performers. The great British public demanded, and got, the staple fare of the consumer in the street: ballads, popular tunes and comic songs. Not only that, but the popular records outsold the classics by hundreds to one. Let's go back to 1918, the end of the First World War. So many able-bodied men had joined the army and fallen in battle that the women were having to step into their civilian jobs in, amongst other things, factories and public transport. Londoners suddenly came into daily contact with a completely new phenomenon that would have been unthinkable only a few years before: the tram conductress. This modern woman doing a man's job caused a bit of a stir, and like anything new at the time, was a good subject for a popular song. The chances are we wouldn't have known about that song. It was probably only popular for a few weeks. But fortunately, in the autumn of 1918, Harry Fay committed it to an acoustic recording, and at least one copy survived. Fares, please.
Wine is rushing for the county council tram. What's all this noise about? And what is it brings the fellows down? Why this hustle? Why this bustle? As upon the car they swarm. Oh, gee, don't you see? It's the girl in the uniform. The tram is full, and this is why they want to hear that pretty little tram girl cry. Fares, please. Have your money ready, fares, please. There's room for two there, you there. Move upon the right and make room for your uncle. Fares, please. Have your money ready, fares, please. I've got to punch your ticket. Now then, Molly, duck your head. You hit it on the trolley. All aboard. I'm shouting all aboard. I'm going to pull the cord. And then we'll homeward whirl. Though the car is full tonight, though it swerves from left to right, you'll be safe if you hold on tight to the tram conductor girl. Gus and Bertie smile at Gertie when she asks them where they're for. They simply say goo goo. Oh, we'll travel anywhere with you. Fat old stagers, gouty majors murmur to this saucy pet. By gad, not half bad, and there's life in the old dog yet. Old Farmer Brown from Lancashire says, hey, by gum, it's extra, and the wife's not here. Fares, please. Have your money ready, fares, please. There's room for two there, you there. Move upon the right and make room for your uncle. Fares, please. Have your money ready, fares, please. I've got to punch your ticket. Now then, Willie, change for Leicester Square and Piccadilly. All aboard. I'm shouting all aboard. I'm going to pull the cord, and then we'll homeward whirl. Though the car is full tonight, though it swerves from left to right, you'll be safe if you hold on tight to the tram conductor girl.
That was Harry Fay in 1918 singing Fares Please. You're listening to Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. Let's go back a little further now, to before the First World War, back to November the 11th, 1899. A new musical comedy has just opened in London. It's named Floradora, and it is a smash hit. It had what was in those days a phenomenally long run of over a year in London, and then a further 2 years in America. Other versions of it went on tour, and it was still being performed by amateur operatic societies in the 1950s. As recently as 1966, it was revived in America as part of the Musical Theatre Research Project. The music was mainly written by Leslie Stewart, famous for such songs as Soldiers of the Queen, Little Dolly Daydream, and Lily of Laguna. He had a fascination for dusky maidens, and they turn up in many of his lyrics, so, not surprisingly, the plot was set on a fictitious Philippine island. Floradora was the name of a perfume derived from the Floradora flower, which was grown on the island, also named Floradora. The plot gave plenty of scope for spectacular set pieces, beautiful chorus numbers, and, of course, tangled affairs of the heart. The recording I'm going to play, which was made 30 years after the first production, includes two numbers that are still recognised even today. The Phrenologist's song, where the charlatan Tweedle Punch tries to pair up the cast according to the principles of the bogus science phrenology, and the double sextet, Tell Me Pretty Maiden, which launched many a chorus girl into an upper-class marriage.
Nothing we disparage like an ill-assorted marriage. You must choose your wife with phrenologic care, for the realm beneath her bonnet has your future mapped upon it. So when you're engaged, take down her hair.
When you're engaged, take down her hair. When
though she may declare it fidgets as you fumble with your digits, you reveal a well-developed bump of crime. You may find her one day thinking your nocturnal crew is sticking. Be advised and jilt her while there's time. And jilt her while there's time.
Be advised and jilt her while there's time. Be advised, be advised, be advised while there's time.
So you know wedding need be dreading once phrenology's defined. What is the virtue that will hurt you and the vice you needn't mind? Set science at defiance, and to grief you're sure to come if you are scorning every warning of the cranium.
So you know wedding need be dreading once phrenology's defined. What is the virtue that will hurt you and the vice you needn't mind? Set science at defiance, and to grief you're sure to come if you are scorning every warning of the cranium.
maiden, are there any more at home like you?
There are a few handsome, but simple girls and troubled.
Then tell me, pretty maiden, what this very simple girl is doing.
That was a selection from the 1930s production of Floradora, sung by the Columbia Light Opera Company. If you'd like to know more about Floradora, search on the internet for Edwardian Musicals Karaoke, and you'll find you can download the complete MIDI karaoke version and listen to the whole thing. Well, there's time for only one more record today, and it's going to be King Charles Gavotte, played and probably composed by Billy Whitlock. We'll be hearing a lot more about Billy Whitlock in future programmes. But for now, this is Adrian Tuddenham on Resonance 104.4 FM, bidding you farewell and looking forward to having your company again next week for another trawl through the junk piles, searching for clues about life before vinyl.
Thank you. Thank you.